Hey kids, if you have a memoir or a novel draft that you're in the process of revising, Author Accelerator has a free treat for you. Ready, Set, Revise, a 3-hour workshop that will help you evaluate your manuscript, figure out where you are in the process, and hopefully make it all less painful. The actual workshop is on Friday, July 8th from noon to 3 p.m. Pacific time, so that's 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. During the workshop, Author Accelerator book coaches, including Jenny Nash, will explain how best to think about revision, talk about the things that writers most often get wrong, and, this is so cool, put you in a small group with a coach who coaches the kind of books you write. This is a great chance to get yourself in the right headspace to finish that book up right. So, for details and to sign up, head to authoraccelerator.com/manuscript-incubator. That's authoraccelerator.com/manuscript-incubator, and of course, the link will be in the show notes. Hey everybody! Welcome to episode 6 of the Hashtag AmWriting Blueprint Challenge. As always, Hashtag AmWriting is the weekly podcast for fun, fresh, actionable writing advice for writers in all genres. Fiction of all the kinds, nonfiction, memoir. We are here to help you get inspired and get the work done. I am KJ Delantonia. I'm the author of the novels In Her Boots and The Chicken Sisters, and also the nonfiction book How to Be a Happier Parent. The Happier Parent sort of fits with the other things better, but that's not what I called it, and that's not what it is, and it's not a novel anyway, even though some people are like, that totally must be fiction. Okay, I'll stop. That's who I am. I'm also the former editor and lead writer for The Motherlode at the New York Times, and with me today is...
I'm Jenny Nash. I am the author of 11 books in 3 genres, and I'm the founder and CEO of Author Accelerator and the creator of the Blueprint Method for Writing Better Books.
So my usual co-host, Jess and Serena, may pop in from time to time, but for this 10-episode series, it's me and Jenny and our book coach guests, and we are focusing specifically on books, although there's plenty here for everyone. So we are halfway through the blueprint, and if you were hanging with us for the first 5 episodes, you know what we've been doing. We have been really digging down into the steps that help writers build a structure for a book, whether they do that early on when the book is just an idea or a few chapters, which would be a perfect world which nobody lives in, or is more likely something that you do when you have a draft or some kind of amorphous blob that may or may not come to an ending and probably refuses to come together, because that's what blobs do and we hate them. But we're gonna mush these into a book. So, going through this process will make writing a new book in any genre easier or helping your draft come together. But if a book isn't in your plans, that's okay. Keep listening, because this is a super fun way to approach reading and thinking about books. It really kind of changes and helps your reading life evolve. And it also helps get your mind rolling for some book ideas that might show up down the road.
So today we have our guest coach with us. This is Suzette Mullen, and Suzette is an Author Accelerator certified book coach who helps nonfiction writers write books that bring light and hope to the world. Suzette has a particular interest in building community for LGBTQ+ memoir writers and is in fact querying her own such memoir even as we speak. Welcome, Suzette.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, this is going to be episode 6, as I said, and today we're going to talk structure. If you've done the exercises up till now, you should know why you're writing and who you're writing for. You've thought about the market, where your readers are, and what they want. You have drafted some back of the book copy in the hopes of reaching those readers and to remind yourself of the promise that you're making them. And you've thought about the change that propels readers through a book, whether it's fiction, memoir, or nonfiction, which is a sneaky way into thinking about theme.
Today is all about the structure of your book. And laying a strong structure is going to make everything better in every way, shape, and form. Usually when a manuscript has problems, the origin of those problems is structure. So we need to figure out what is holding this story or this argument up, what is the shape of it, where are the edges of it, and that's what we're going to be talking about today.
But before we do, this 10-episode series comes with a challenge. So even if this is the first time you're hearing about it, you can still join in. You can get weekly emails about the assignments and commit yourself to finishing in the next few weeks. Or you can go back to the beginning. And by the end of the series, you'll have a blueprint for your book that might come just in time for something like NaNoWriMo, or whenever you're ready to either start writing or start revising or dive back in. This might be the thing that helps you save that draft you're working on from despair. So if you want to get in on the challenge and you want all the details about the assignments, which believe me, you totally do, go to authoraccelerator.com/amwritingblueprintchallenge, and that's where you'll find all the details and everything you need to make this work for you. All right, structure. Here we go. The meat of the episode. We're doing it.
We're finally doing it. Here we go. So the thing about structure is this is where we really diverge in terms of the category of book you're writing, if you're writing nonfiction, fiction, or memoir. So this is a little more divided than the other episodes. We'll come back together shortly, but the division is real. So I want to start off by talking about fiction. So on the fiction side, when we're thinking about structure, what we're thinking about first is time. What period of time does this story cover? We know a little bit about plot or what's going to happen from our other exercises. We know about the protagonist and how they're going to change, but what period of time is this going to cover? A novel that covers, I'm a huge fan of novels that happen in a really short period of time. You know, it's like 72 hours or a week or whatever. But you have to know, is it 4 generations? Is it a weekend? Is it 3 weeks? What is the time constraint that your story covers? And one thing that comes up a lot when you ask that question is, what about flashbacks and going back in time? So we'll talk about that too. But let's just first talk about the basic timeline of a book. So KJ, I saw you nod when I said I love books that have a short timeline. Is that a thing you like as well?
Yeah, I was thinking about how a book that has its short time, like some people do both. Like there's usually there's both. And you mentioned flashbacks and backstory, and that's part of it. But there also, like there's this sort of fascinating structure where the one story takes place within 72 hours, but within it, there's another story that, you know, takes place over a generation or, we get really complicated. I was just thinking, I think I was nodding furiously away because it's so that external structure of the period of time during which your sort of storyteller is telling the story, however, whoever they are, it's just so key.
It is. So, Suzette, when you're helping a writer at this stage of the process on memoir or fiction, because memoir has many of the same questions and constraints in terms of structure. What do you find that people struggle with? Do they struggle with that question of, well, I want to tell something from my childhood, so doesn't that mean I start in my childhood?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the what's the beginning is often the question, because there's so many beginnings, right? I work with memoir writers a lot, and it's the ending often is a little easier to figure out, you know, where does the story end, but where are you actually going to begin? And of course, as you both mentioned, there's going to be flashbacks, and there's going to be, you need the context, you need the backstory, but where does the actual story, you know, begin on page one? And in my experience coaching and also my own writing, sometimes it takes a good number of attempts to really land on what is the right place to start. And I try to coach writers to not get super frustrated, like that they have to get it right the first time, because it is something that you have to kind of play around with. But that beginning, where does the story really start? That's a big question.
And fictionally, you know, you may find yourself with something that constrains the length of time that you can specifically cover in I guess what I think of as story present. So the book that I'm working on right now, I need to have a character who can be removed from their normal life and dragged unwillingly to be with the characters that I'm focused on for some period of time. So this can't be 3 months, like, because the person isn't, or I'd have to change the person, right? The person would have to be someone that could disappear from their regular life for 3 months with no one. So that has complicated and constrained the amount of time I'm allowed to have within story present really considerably and in some weird way. So I guess what I'm saying is thinking about, like, what are sort of all the things that have to happen in your story? And then what's the smallest unit of time you can compress them into? I feel like that's kind of a good way to approach it, because it's actually good that I can only have this amount of time for the most part.
Well, I love the idea of constraint, because what is true about writing a novel or a memoir is as soon as you make one decision, a lot of decisions hang off that. So the idea of, oh, I can do anything I want, I can write anything I want. You know, if you're writing sci-fi or fantasy, it's like people could fly, they could go back in time. You know, all those things are true. But as soon as you make one decision, you've shut a bunch of doors for things that can't happen logically, or it's just going to be a big glom of nothing. And those constraints are actually what you're seeking those constraints. So what KJ was talking about was, my character has to do X. In order for my story to work, my character has to do X. And that, you know, even if it's just, what year do I set my novel in? What, you know, should it be 1972 or should it be, 1775? Like, there's a constraint. It's going to impact genre. It's going to impact the world of the story. It's going to impact whether there's cell phones or not, you know, whether there's all the things. So the...
Well, and right there, the cell phone question. I mean, you know, there are stories you can't tell anymore in a world, or you have to get rid of their cell phones. So, you know, thinking about that, I swear to you, that's a reason people keep setting things in the 90s, because it's like, it's practically today, except that I can, you know, have people disappear more easily. I heard Rebecca Mackay, who's the author of The Great Believers, I tell a really interesting story around that. So she, a major piece of her story takes place in the AIDS epidemic in Chicago, at the very beginning of it. So she has this year that she really wants to talk about. And then, for story reasons, she needs to be at the 20th anniversary, or maybe the 25th anniversary, of those events. So, and her person needs to be in Paris, because story, and she's laid all this out. And she gets to the 25th, she goes to that year, and it's a year, like it's a year in time, and it really happened, and she's riding along, and she needs to hit the 25th anniversary of this one thing, and then all of a sudden she's like, somebody bombed a subway in this month, in this year. And there's no, I'm going to have to write that into my story. It just tells you where some of these decisions can lead you. And she did, and it worked, and it was great. And actually, it's one of the best parts of the story. But she didn't even know that was coming, right?
I think also the challenge with the constraint with memoir writers is that they've actually lived, this is real life, right? So they've actually lived this whole life. And so they have to find, rather than invent it so much as you would in fiction, they have to find it within their life. And that can be really challenging. And kind of the classic example that I know a lot of coaches use, and I've used because it's simple to understand, is Wild, because you have that hike, right? And it's a certain number of days, and the hike begins on day one, and the hike ends on whatever, I forget how many days it was. And that's the story present. And of course, Cheryl Strayed is going, you know, back and forth in time and all kinds of things all over the, but you always know, the reader always knows when they're on that trail. And so that's one of the things I talk to writers about is like, what's your Pacific Crest Trail for your story?
I love that. Yeah, memoir writers, it can be very difficult because there's so much material. The material all feels equally important and weighty because it's your life. And there's a temptation to throw everything in and, you know, well, people have to know about this or they have to know about that or they have to know about the other. But the best memoirs really pare down and focus on one plot or one thread and other things are present, but you know that it's about the thing that it's about. I mentioned in a recent episode that I've been reading Know My Name by Chanel Miller. It's incredible. And I'm about 60% through. I'm reading it on Kindle, which is why I can tell you that number. And we've been following this trial, this rape trial, and I thought for a while that that was going to be the story present, that we were going to follow the trial and the trial would end and that would be the book. And 60% of the way through, the trial is over. So now I'm really curious about what is going to sustain that narrative drive and sustain that story all the way through to the end. It's obviously a very conscious choice that she made. And I suspect I know why. So the reason for that structural choice hangs on what the point is. And one of the points that she has been making the whole time is about language and not wanting to call herself a victim, not wanting to attach herself always to this person who harmed her and wanting to separate herself from that. So I'm certain that she did not want to say my story is defined by this trial because that's about her point. So the plot or the structure or the shape of this memoir is going to be derived from that, which is why we ask, I was going to say ask and answer, and I glommed them together. We ask and answer those questions before we talk about structure, because if you don't know that about this story, it's going to have a very different structure.
So in either fiction or memoir, to go back to what we thought about you know, what's your point and, you know, the theme and the arc of emotional change for the protagonist, whether it's a real person or a fictional person, is going to drive both the beginning and the end of the novel. And that's a way we are going to suggest to listeners that they shape this, right? Is okay. If you can't maybe think about the whole structure and whether you want to have a whole year or 6 months or whatever, but you can think about where you think it starts and where you think it ends and then go from there.
Absolutely, right? So what we're really saying is that the structure and the plot needs to hang on the emotion, which is what the best books, again, when they grab us, when they take us somewhere, when they make us feel something, it's not just because a bunch of cool things happened within 72 hours or, a bunch of interesting things happened over 3 decades. It's because that's the structure that we needed to tell that particular story. And I know because we've spoken about it before, Suzette, that you and I both have an interest and have looked a lot at memoirs that don't follow what I would call a classic or a traditional structure, that they spiral or they move in different ways, and the choices, when people make those choices, if you want it to work, meaning you want readers to care, it can't just be, ooh, I want to try this cool shape. I want to try this cool, funky way of writing my story. I'm going to fracture the time and I'm going to go backwards, or, you know, like you can't kind of, I mean, when I say you can't, you can do whatever you want, but you know, if it's not working, you might want to look at the fact that you've that shape, that funky shape, has to in some way be informed by your point. Do you find that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a you know, it's a more sophisticated and complicated way to tell a story. And it can be very interesting, but it's not an easy thing to do. So I think you have to be clear on all the things we've been talking about. You have to understand your point, what you've come to the page to say. And you do have to have a sense of the beginning and the end, but then you can break it up. And I brought a stack of books with me because I was thinking about this. And, there's all kinds of interesting, you know, elliptical structures. There's E structures. There's spiral structures. And one of the favorite books I teach from often is called In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado. And, you know, on its face, the plot is a story of partner abuse in a same gender relationship. And it's a memoir, but she uses the device of In the Dream House, and there's just these little, some of them are like one paragraph chapters, and then some of them are multi-pages, and it's all over the place, but it works because she knows what she's come to the page to say. And I think with certain types of memoir in particular, they lend themselves more to this fractured type, because that's type of storytelling, because that's how the memories come, right? You know, in an abusive situation, I'm looking at The Part That Burns by Janine Ouellette is another beautiful memoir that is told in a non-traditional way. So yeah, I'm a big fan of them, but I think you first have to get the fundamentals down before you start getting into more, you know, fractured or different types of structures.
Well, we'll talk about this in the next episode, but when you go to actually write out the inside outline for a memoir that you believe is going to be told in a fractured way, I always counsel people, do it chronologically first, so you at least understand the movement of the story and the shape of it and the structure of it. It's really hard to do a fractured story, to plan a fractured story, if that makes sense. It's kind of like writing poetry. It's very fluid. It's very free. And, you know, but you, it's kind of like a mystery writer. You have to know who did it, right? In order to just not disclose, what's the opposite of that? Obfuscate the truth from the reader. You know, you have to know. So the work that we do on structure is so we're really clear. Okay, if I'm writing memoir, my story is going to start here and it's going to end here. It's going to cover this period of time. If you're writing fiction, same thing. It's going to start here, end here, cover this period of time. And this is the person who's going to tell the tale. You know, you have to kind of get those things set so that you can be creative and free when you're on the page.
But in nonfiction, so this is the funny moment of planning where, like you said, nonfiction and fiction/memoir really diverge, because for fiction/memoir, this process of finding your structure, I mean, if in terms of just writing something down for you know, your assignment, it's like two lines. It's nothing, right? You know, maybe you go and you write your beginning chapter a few times. That's something that Jenny suggests you do in the blueprint. But basically, this is a lot of thinking and probably writing and then coming back to it. But for nonfiction, your structural choices really determine what the book is that you're going to pitch in a very different way.
That's right. And the shape of a nonfiction book can... Well, you talked about the rowing book last time, KJ, that from your favorite nonfiction development book.
The Art of the Proposal.
Right? And how one idea can take many forms. And the example that I always give in nonfiction when I'm teaching this is my own interest in writing about my experience with migraine. I have long wanted to write a book about it, and I have put that project on pause. But when I was deep into it, the structural decision is going to dictate what that book becomes. I could write a journal a prompt-filled journal where I'm guiding my writer to think about their migraine triggers or their relationship to migraine. I could write a story, a memoir, and I knew that if I were to do that, it was going to be very fractured because that's the experience of what having migraine is like. I could have written a story about a character. I could write a novel, you know, of somebody with a migraine. There's so many different... The way I think about it is I knew I wanted to write about it. I was called to write about it. I was interested in writing about it. And I was in search of a container. What container should I pour this material in? And is it going to be, you know, I think of clay. Is it going to be a teapot or a vase or a bowl? And that's really what you need to do when you have nonfiction. I frequently work with clients who have the challenge of they want to tell their own story. They're usually an expert in something, and they want to guide other people to a change, a transformation as well. So they're writing some sort of how-to, but it's, you know, going to be 60, 70, maybe 80% of their own story that they're telling while they're guiding us through this. And so what sort of shape or structure is that material going to take? And some of the most famous nonfiction books that we all know and love have the reason that we know and love them, I am convinced, is because of the genius structure that their writers chose. So books that I'm referring to here are like Eat, Pray, Love. It's a memoir. It's a nonfiction book. What a completely genius structure. The three ideas connected to three places. I mean, just that book is obviously a mega bestseller, but I think the title is incredible. I think the structure is just elegant. It so neatly fits its material. Another one that I love to refer to is The Artist's Way. Many of the writing listeners probably know and love that book. And, you know, at the time it was written, just what a stroke of genius to overlay the creative process to the recovery process and have it be a 12-step process. That seems like now it's so embedded in our consciousness, like, well, sure, that was the structure, but imagine that writer landing on that idea and seeing that shape. That's the moment of, I think, where the lightning strikes on nonfiction. And I'll just reference one more because I'm just a huge fan of the structures of Michael Pollan. All of his books are just gorgeously structured. And one of my favorites is Cooked, where he talks about the five different ways that humans cook food. And he's telling stories within those different methods of cooking food. And again, you think, well, that's obvious. But when he was searching for, you know, he wanted to talk about the big idea of what cooking is and why humans do it and glorify that process. And there was no obviousness of landing on that structure, but it's when you find that perfect marriage of shape and content.
Which is not easy.
It's so not easy. It's so not easy. And, you know, I'm citing really famous books, but this is the work of anybody who wants to write a nonfiction book. And the way that in this assignment that we're going to give this week, I'll be talking about it, is you don't have to come up with a brand new structure. You could steal somebody else's structure. That's completely fine. There's actually not that many structures. And I talk about three different prototypes that are taking a really complex problem and really kind of dumbing it down on purpose, but just to make it easier to pick. And those three structures would be, okay, I'm going to tell a single narrative. My single narrative in nonfiction could be a memoir. That's what Suzette was mentioning. Wild is a single narrative. It could be following a famous person is a single narrative, and whatever that plot or material might be. Books that are single narratives, Eat, Pray, Love is a perfect example. Lori Gottlieb's Maybe You Should Talk to Someone, about a therapist going through therapy. That's her own story, you know, and the structure is that single straightforward narrative. I also love Fractured Stories, Suzette, and A Three Dog Life by Abigail Thomas is one of my favorites, where she's writing about her husband's brain injury in a very fractured way. Those are all single narratives. So if you're thinking, well, I think my story will fit into that container, you kind of steal one of those containers. Then the second structural prototype is a collective narrative. So that's a book that is the topic or the concept that you're writing about takes precedence and dictates how the work is going to flow. So examples of that would be Zibby Owens' Moms Don't Have Time To, which you were part of, right, KJ? Didn't you write a piece for that?
Yep. So essay collections.
Right. So the author of that book made a decision that she wanted to write about this topic, and she wanted to invite other writers to contribute to it, and that was the shape of that. Another example of a collective memoir would be something like Tribe of Mentors, which is that Tim Ferriss book about, you know, advice from the world's top performers. That's a kind of collective narrative where you're bringing together a bunch of different voices. And then there's a third prototype, which is a conceptual design. And that is when you're bringing together something around an idea. So my favorite example of this is Bird by Bird by Anne Lamott. She wants to teach us. The concept that she is dealing with is the idea of writing. How do you become a writer? What do you do? It's got very much of her own story in it, but the concept is what's driving this work. Another example is Quiet by Susan Cain, where she's talking about this idea or this concept of what it's like to be an introvert in a noisy world. And that idea, she's got research, she's got stories, she's got ideas that drives it. So these three different structural prototypes, if you're starting out with a nonfiction book, it could just be very helpful. Just pick one. And does my material fit into this container? And if it doesn't, does it fit into this other container? Does it work better if it looks like this? And again, you're just looking for that shape, the edges of where the idea is going to begin and end. We will put some of those examples in our show notes so that you can pick. But no matter whether you're doing nonfiction, memoir, or fiction, we're talking really about choice, making a decision. That's what all of these things have to do with. So, Suzette, when you're working with someone, do you find that people balk at this kind of thing? Like, I don't want to define my structure. I just want to write.
You know, I think they struggle with it, but I wouldn't say they balk at it. I think that they know. I mean, I think that structure is one of the number one problems or issues that writers come to book coaches for, because they may have been trying to figure it out on their own and they're having a hard time. So I think they're looking for some guidance on how to actually find their structure. So I totally agree. I you know, sometimes it's obvious in nonfiction which prototype, but in that sort of memoir / self-helpy space, it can be a little tricky. So I encourage them to try them on and see, you know, does one of these feel more natural than not? And usually the answer will emerge when they do that, because one of them will just feel like, yeah, this is it. And the other one will feel forced. So, it's so great to have these specific tools to guide writers toward, because otherwise it's just they feel overwhelmed often with the structure.
I say what I love about this way of thinking about it is that every time you give an example of a book and the way that it fits into a particular structure, it reminds us as readers that that was a choice and that it was not obvious, and it makes you think of the other possibilities. So, you know, you can look at something like maybe you should talk to someone and think, you know, if she wanted to tell the story of a therapist needing therapy, basically. So, and she told it through you know, through kind of actually, I mean, it's a single narrative, yet it has some collective narrative elements, right? Because it's got the different stories in it. You can see she could have done it in a more of a memoir-y way, or she could have done something like, you know, how to know if you need therapy if you're a therapist,
right?
Or, you know, a workbook for therapists who need therapy.
Or it could, it could have been my eight therapy sessions on what I learned in each one, or a year of therapy, right? The constraint totally changes what the book is.
Right. And same with Cheryl Strayed's Wild. You know, she uses the hike to tell the story, but she was talking about her relationship with her mother. She could have written Crying in H Mart.
Yep.
Which is another story about somebody's relationship with their mother who has died. And that one takes more of a year of grief structure. You know, so she could have done that. And when you look at these books that take fiction too, I can't stop, but I kept thinking about Emily Henry's second book, which is a rom-com about two people who have, they took a vacation together every year as friends until something terrible went wrong. And now they're on the vacation where they're trying to like make everything right again. So half the book is the present day vacation, which goes badly. And half the book is each of the priests preceding like 13 vacations or whatever. And that's a very specific structure. You could see other ways she could have done that, but I love that you were saying these structures all seem obvious in retrospect, but considering them harder makes you think about the time the author spent making the choices.
Well, and I think the way to approach this, if you're thinking about a new story, most of the time, the idea that comes into somebody's head is either plot or world. So, you know, if it's fantasy or sci-fi, people are thinking like, ooh, I want to write, you know, this cool thing about dragons that show up on this island, and they think plot, or I'm gonna write a memoir about my relationship with my mother. People don't usually start with structure. Structure's not usually the thing that comes into your head. And so the danger is if you have this great idea and then you just start working on it, you're going to paint yourself into a corner. And that's what we're trying to prevent you to do. And I say that with such assuredness because, as Suzette just said, it's what we see when people need help. That's when they come to book coaches. And sometimes people know that they need help from the very start. They just get it. They know that they like help. They know they like having a collaborator. But oftentimes it's they realize they can't figure it out. They can't see the forest for the trees and their own work, and they're coming to us for help. And usually the thing that we see is structure. The structure has not, they've not made a choice. So what we're talking about here is when you've got that seed of that idea, that lightning strike, the next thing is, okay, how am I going to shape this? What is the structure going to be? And from where I sit, I think that is the secret sauce. I really do. I think it's the thing that makes the difference between good and great in all the genres, that you can write the story that's in your heart in any way you want, but finding the structure that brings it most to life is, well, Suzette, you and I are both involved in something right now in which that's exactly the work that writers are doing. And it's just, I find it so thrilling because it's almost like another gear, getting into another gear. It's like, okay, here's a story. Here's the characters. Here's the point. Here's the constraint. Here's all the things. But exactly what is it going to be? And when they fit those two things together, it's you feel it in your bones. It's like, oh, that's great, you know? And that's what we want for our listeners.
So what should people do? Like, is it time? Is it time? Is it time to give them the assignment that comes with thinking about structure?
It is almost time. Before we do that, I just want to ask you one more question, KJ, because I know that in your fiction writing recently, you have spent a lot of time on these ideas and searching for your structure and searching for your shape and what it's going to be and who's going to tell the tale and all of those things. When you're, how do you know when you land on it? That's the thing I want to ask.
I thus far, and you know, I'm writing my third book, so I could still consider myself kind of a beginner at this. Thus far, I've pretty much stuck to a I've lost the word, but you know, the one where you start at the beginning and
a single narrative, yeah,
chronology,
yeah, a single narrative, yeah. Chronological. Thus far, well, I've alternated points of view. I think the thing as I read that I wonder if I could do but haven't sort of explored yet is the multi point of view narrative that all, you know, all comes out in the same place. So every time I start something new, which is all of twice, I mean, you know, after the first time, that's what I ask myself. And also a thing that I find myself asking is, can I do the same thing over and over? And of course the answer is yes.
Right.
You know, I mean, I feel like as writers, we think, oh, but in the last book, I had two points of view. And it's like, well, yeah. And people liked that. So, you know, do it again. No one is as hard on us in terms of trying to come up with a creative structure or something different or something fresh or something new as we are. For all this talk about structure, most of what we read is single narrative, chronological, and we like that.
It's true.
So, you know, I don't know that I have an answer other than I think it's okay not to have. I would love to land upon some complex and interesting structure, but I think it's okay not to.
Well, I mean, you're a real pro, and I say that about you all the time. Whether you're a beginner at fiction or not, you're such a pro because people really cause themselves a lot of frustration when they take on too complex a thing at the start. It's like, I've never written a novel and I have seven point of view characters and it's going to be three generations. And it's like, that's really hard. Do you know how to just write a straightforward narrative? You know? So I never want to talk anybody out of a story that they're called to write, but just, yeah, there's nothing wrong with writing a simple structure or a structure that's worked for a gazillion other writers. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I mean, structure can be at the center of something or it can be something that's noticeable or it's just the backbone that's holding it up. And if it's, you know, a chronological story that also tells, you know, a backstory in a way that ends up at a particular spot, because that's really common, right? You have... you know, you have your story of what's happening now and probably the sort of mystery of why the protagonist can't just go, oh, well, obviously what I should do is go to my mother and apologize. Because that would be really short. You know, so you have the whole story of why they can't do that intertwined there. You know, that works great. And it's a classic structure that readers respond to.
And I would ask you the same question very quickly, Suzette. How did you know with your memoir when you landed on the right structure?
Oh boy, well, it just, I guess, had lots of beginnings, and when I finally landed on the right beginning, that helped a lot. And I just I have, it's kind of somewhat chronological, but I also have woven in some vignettes within the chronology, and it just felt right. I mean, I don't really know, you know, briefly, that would be my brief answer. It felt right. And I didn't feel like I was forcing things. And yeah. That would be the brief answer.
I love that answer. Okay, so the assignment for this week's challenge is if you're writing fiction or memoir, we want to ask you to define the time period that your story covers. Where that means you have to know where it begins and where it ends. And that's very specifically the scene. What scene do we see when it begins? What scene do we see when it ends? And just name that period of time. It's 3 weeks, it's a year, it's 3 years. That's the key point. And it would also be extremely helpful to define who's telling the tale, which character. And that goes with structure because, as KJ mentioned, the can that point of view character be in all the places they have to be to tell that tale? Or do you need an omniscient narrator who can see all the things? So choosing your narrator, defining your timeline, knowing where it begins and ends. It seems simple, but it's not simple. And don't be afraid to play with this and try different things and try out a different shape and look at books you love and see what they do and what does your material look like in that kind of a shape. And on the nonfiction side, it is defining which one of those structural prototypes you think is going to fit best. Are you you're telling a straightforward single narrative? Are you telling a collective narrative with a lot of different voices? Or are you talking about an idea that's going to drive the way you structure that material? So choosing the structural prototype, and again, it's looking at other books that worked, that you like what they did, and defining what it's going to be. So it's an exercise that just has to do with what is the shape of the thing that I'm going to write.
All right. Well, this was fantastic. Thank you, Suzette, for coming and talking to us for our, you know, episode number 6 of this particular challenge. Listeners, again, if you want to play along and get all the assignments by email, whether you go back to the beginning or you start up right now and catch up, you can find all the details for this at authoraccelerator.com/amwritingblueprintchallenge. You can talk back to us by emailing us at amwriting@substack.com. You can find the podcast at amwritingpodcast.com. I think that's it for the podcast. Suzette, where can people best find you?
Yeah, at my website, yourstoryfinder.com. That's the best place.
Excellent. Jenny, you want to take us out this time?
I always get very stressed out when you ask me to do that, but yes. So for this week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perilla. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Friends, it's me, KJ, with a quick ask. If you love the show, there are two fantastic things you can do for us to help us keep going. The first is to support us financially. Not surprisingly, producing this show is not free, and you may have noticed we don't do many sponsors. If you need online therapy, meal kits, or nutritional supplements, we're just not the people to ask about it. Writing advice is what we know, and it's what we're going to share. So, if you love ours, please go to amwritingpodcast.com and click subscribe. Right now, annual support is only $64 a year. You might get bonuses, but you will definitely get our gratitude. And if financial support isn't in your cards right now, we totally get it. You can still get weekly show notes at that same subscribe link, and you could also do us a free solid favor by writing a review of the podcast in iTunes or wherever you review your podcasts. Or hey, share the show with a writer friend. And thanks for listening and being there for us. We hope we're also there for you.